WCRI's Festival Series highlights one of our community's greatest musical traditions, the Newport Music Festival. Since 1969, the Newport Music Festival has hosted over 2,000 concerts in Rhode Island's most prestigious venues, while presenting world-renowned and emerging classical music artists from around the globe. The Newport Music Festival has left an indelible mark on our music history here in Rhode Island, as well as around the world. Now, here's host Mike Mano, along with the festival's executive director, Pamela Pantos.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to another program on the Newport Music Festival special series that WCRI is very happy to present, welcoming Pamela Pantos back. She is the executive director of the Newport Music Festival, and it's nice to see you. For Pamela, we're already on show number 5.
Good evening, Mike. This has been fabulous.
So this is a continuing series that WCRI is very happy to present. And what do you have for us this evening?
Actually, this evening's program is very exciting, as it is the first in a series of sneak previews into our summer 2018 50th anniversary season.
50th anniversary, a long time. A lot of history there, and there's been a lot of great music at the Newport Music Festival. And I'm sure it's going to continue. So we have whom?
Well, as we've been discussing on the show, Mike, the festival was started by a small group of classical music lovers in 1969, and then through the years was stewarded and developed and adopted by this community to become an integral part of the Rhode Island cultural landscape. So before we get started this evening with our sneak preview into Leonard Bernstein, and we're celebrating his 100th anniversary of his birth, I would really like to take this moment to thank Jim and Sue Clow, who are the generous sponsors of this Bernstein evening. Without the support of devoted patrons like Sue and Jim, we would not be able to bring the excellence and diversity in programming that the public has come to expect from the Newport Music Festival. So this evening we'll begin with the overture to his opera, Candide. And you know what's interesting is when we think of Bernstein, we think of this man who was really a modernist and embraced his own period of time, embraced the time in which he lived, and yet Candide is based on this book written by Voltaire in 1759. This operetta was first performed in 1956 and went through multiple iterations. It kept getting changed and changed and changed, and Bernstein worked with Richard Wilbur, Dorothy Parker, Lillian Hellman, Stephen Sondheim, John Wells. And during this process, he kept composing, but he's not the only person who did orchestrations for the piece. He also had Maurice Perez and Hershey Kay doing his orchestrations. And I don't know if our listeners know the difference between an orchestrator and a composer, but many people think that the composer does all of his own orchestrations, and that's not entirely the case. As in this situation, the composer comes up with the idea, the melodies, maybe even the harmonies they want to hear, and they often turn it over in the musical theater world to orchestrators who master the individual instruments and actually come up with the sound in the orchestra that the composer was thinking of.
Right, you're eventually going to hear. So he may not have thought of a clarinet coming in, but the clarinet gets put in, or that kind of thing.
Exactly. So it's quite fascinating how that gets put together. So the first production of Candide was a complete box office disaster and only ran for a couple of months. But the show was then expanded and then was adopted by the New York City Opera in 1982 when Beverly Sills, the great Beverly Sills, was general manager, and she ran it for 34 performances. And then since then, opera companies around the world have adopted this version of the piece, and it has become a huge success. Again, it was quite unsuccessful at its premiere, and now it's very beloved. And what the piece that we know the best is the overture, and we often hear it as the opener for many symphony concerts. What we'll be doing is performing this overture to start our concert on July 20th with 2 9-foot pianos and full percussion. So let's start our program with this wonderful piece. And in this recording, we have Leonard Bernstein himself conducting the New York Philharmonic. And just a little added piece of trivia for our listeners, Leonard Bernstein made over 400 recordings, half of which were with the New York Philharmonic.
Thank you. Exciting and invigorating music. I'm all dancing in my chair here. This is great.
Isn't that wonderful? I mean, he's such a great composer. So next on this program will be the famous I Hate Music song cycle.
Wait a minute. I hate music. I thought we loved music.
No, this is what it's called. I'll tell you all about it.
All right.
As we know, Bernstein was a huge educator of children and youth in America. As a matter of fact, he led the Young People's Concerts from the New York Philharmonic when he arrived as their conductor in 1958. And actually, in that year, they began televising these concerts. Bernstein conducted a total of 53 of these performances, all of which were telecast on CBS. And Bernstein's performances inspired generations of musicians and music lovers, and many people say that they received their most significant music education through these programs by Leonard Bernstein. One of the reasons that these programs were so successful is that Bernstein presented classical music in a manner which was understandable. He simply talked to his audience. Bernstein loved children, as we know. He also narrated The Carnival of Animals and Peter and the Wolf, amongst many other recordings. So this early work, I Hate Music, written in 1943, is just another example of his passion for understanding the perspective of children and presenting it in a musical form. He saw the world through the eyes of children. He dedicated the cycle to Edith Merrill, who was a friend of Bernstein's as well as an artist and his flatmate in the 1940s. And I'm not sure if the story is apocryphal or not, but it's been said that when she was fed up with hearing Bernstein constantly coaching singers and playing the piano, she often uttered under her breath the phrase, "I hate music." So he created
that's where it comes from,
this cycle. And it has 5 songs in it. The titles are My Name is Barbara, Jupiter Has 7 Moons, I Hate Music, A Big Indian and a Little Indian, and I'm a Person Too. So we are just going to play the last two of this cycle, A Big Indian and a Little Indian, and I'm a Person Too, sung by Harolyn Blackwell with Kathy Summer on piano.
All right, we'll do that and then take a short break and be back with more.
If the little Indian was the son of the big Indian, but the big Indian was not the father of the little Indian, who was he? I'll give you two measures. His mother! I just found out today that I'm a person too, like you. Like balloons, lots of people like balloons, but everyone says, isn't she cute? She likes balloons. I'm a person too, like you. I like things that everyone likes. I like soft things and movies and horses and warm things and red things. Don't you? Behind the sky, and what's behind the sky. But everyone says, isn't she sweet? She wants to know everything, don't you? Of course I'm very be saying all these things in front of so many people like you.
Welcome back to our special series of the Newport Music Festival, and we're talking about all things this year that are going to be going on with the great festival that is celebrating its 50th anniversary. I'm Mike Mano, sitting with Pamela Pantos, the executive director, and it's been great having these little sneak previews as we go along. What else is going to be coming up?
Well, I'm glad you asked. Actually, there are a couple things I'd love to share with our listeners, one of which is that tickets will go on sale quite early this year, as a matter of fact, in mid-January. So our listeners should look out for the announcement in early January to go online and purchase tickets. And this is earlier than it's been in the past in response to our audience's requests. In my conversations with many patrons this summer, individuals returned to the fact that they wanted to know the full program offering in order to be able to plan their summer, when they come to Newport, and for locals, when they want to make sure that they're here, you know, that they stay in Newport to enjoy a certain concert. So we've been working with our resident artists and our guest artists to secure their dates and work with them on the programming and moving that fast forward.
How will our listeners be able to purchase tickets?
Well, they'll be able to go online in January to our website, newportmusic.org, and find out the full program for the summer and purchase tickets, and the box office will be open at that point as well.
Excellent. All right. Let's get back to our Bernstein program.
So Leonard Bernstein had a huge circle of family, friends, and colleagues, and he composed a series of short pieces he called anniversaries in tribute to them, and he created three different sets. The first set is called Seven Anniversaries and includes seven pieces with the following titles to whom each of these little pieces was dedicated. Number one, for Aaron Copland. Number two, for my sister Shirley. Number three, in memoriam Alfred Eisner. Number four, for Paul Bowles. Number five, in memoriam for Natalie Kuzovitsky. Number six for Serge Kuzovitsky, and number seven for William Schumann. And as our listeners might have noticed, there are several composers here, Copland and Schumann, Kuzovitsky, obviously. Bernstein referred to Copland and Kuzovitsky as his musical fathers and acknowledged their encouragement and their musical influence on his development as both a conductor and a composer. And he also was fascinated by the written and spoken word. He wrote books, lots of articles, and he describes his first encounter with Eisner, who, as you might remember, just he dedicated one of these little anniversaries to. And these are his, Lenny's words. Back at Harvard, I had a remarkable roommate named Eisner, who was well on his way to becoming a super Hemingway. He had an unusual love for music, promiscuous and passionate, and I had a similarly constituted love for words. This led to a constructive relationship, as you can imagine, which taught us both a lot of half-truths. He died of cancer, damn it, shortly after graduation. Eisner and I used to have bull sessions almost nightly, thundering arguments that raged till dawn and made me miss my counterpoint class. Like all bull sessions, these never ended in resolution. It was through Eisner that I first realized how different a writer's approach to music can be. He talks about Natalie Kuzovitsky's death as well, and you can really hear his mourning in his little anniversary to her. And again, talking about Kuzovitsky, it was a huge inspiration to Leonard Bernstein as a teacher, a conductor, a promoter of new music. And Kuzovitsky, as we know, led the Boston Symphony for 25 years and created the Berkshire Music Center at Tanglewood, where Bernstein was his prize student conductor. So we are going to listen to the first three of these anniversaries for Aaron Copland, for my sister Shirley, in memoriam Alfred Eisner.
Thank you.
Mike, as we mentioned, Leonard Bernstein was many things to many people, a composer, conductor, mentor, teacher, and a humanitarian. Jamie Bernstein, his daughter, writes so beautifully of her father. My father, Leonard Bernstein, grew up in a world of stark political contrasts, from the Depression to Roosevelt and the New Deal, from Nazism to World War II and the dropping of the atom bomb on Hiroshima. Bernstein witnessed a world full of evil that was occasionally tempered by powerful forces of good. In the mid-1960s, just as life and public justice in America seemed to be making some progress, Bernstein and his contemporaries found themselves swept up in the upheavals of three devastating assassinations. President John F. Kennedy in 1963, and then 5 years later, Reverend Martin Luther King and President Kennedy's brother, Robert F. Kennedy. And then there was yet another long, wounding war in Vietnam. Through it all, my father clung hard to the belief that by creating beauty and by sharing it with as many people as possible, artists had the power to tip the earthly balance in favor of brotherhood and peace. After all, he reasoned, if humans could create and appreciate musical harmony, then surely they were capable of replicating that same harmony in the world. Then surely they were capable of replicating that very same harmony in the world they lived in. Shortly after President Kennedy's assassination, my father said, "This will be our reply to violence, to make music more intensely, more beautifully, more devotedly than ever before. Each time it is reprinted or uttered, that statement provides the same gleam of comfort and all-embracing optimism that my father conveyed to the world during his lifetime through his every note and act." So beautiful. The next piece on the program is called Khalil. Khalil is the Hebrew word for flute and was written in 1981 in memory of the brilliant 19-year-old Israeli flautist Yadin Tenenbaum, who was killed at the onset of the 1973 Yom Kippur War. Bernstein himself wrote, "Khalil is formally unlike any other work I have written, but is like much of my music in its struggle between tonal and non-tonal forces. In this case, I sense that struggle as involving wars and the threat of wars, the overwhelming desire to live, and the consolations of art, love, and the hope for peace." Unfortunately, Mike, this evening we do not have time to hear the entire piece, but we will play an excerpt to give our listeners a sense of this deeply poignant composition. So this is Khalil, played by Sharon Bazzali on flute, with John Neschling conducting the Sao Paulo Symphony Orchestra.
We'll listen to that, then take a short break and be back with more.
Thank you.
Pamela, as someone that grew up in the 1960s, I'm anxious to get to my favorite part of this program, I think.
Okay, I know what everybody's waiting for. So no program on Bernstein would be complete without an excerpt from West Side Story. So as we know, West Side Story was inspired by William Shakespeare's play, Romeo and Juliet. In 1947, Jerome Robbins approached Bernstein about collaborating on a contemporary musical adaptation of that piece. He proposed that the plot focus on the conflict between an Irish Catholic family and a Jewish family living on the Lower East Side of Manhattan during the Easter Passover season. The girl had survived the Holocaust and emigrated from Israel, and the whole conflict was to be centered around the anti-Semitism of the Catholic Jets towards the Jewish Emeralds. So the East Side Story, over the rewriting of the piece, which happened several times, turned into West Side Story as it focused on the gang violence that was omnipresent in this period of time.
Okay.
And Bernstein was concurrently composing West Side Story and Candide, and it led to some switches of the material between the two pieces. For example, Tony and Maria's duet, One Hand, One Heart, was originally intended for Cunegonda in Candide, and the music of Officer Krupke was pulled from the Venice scene in Candide and moved to West Side Story. Just a little trivia for the listeners.
I love that part.
So the original 1957 Broadway production was very successful. And then, of course, the 1961 musical film of the same name was directed by Robert Wise. And the film was nominated for 11 Academy Awards and won 10 of them. Bernstein talks about the period of time in which he wasn't sure that West Side Story was actually going to come to fruition. Everyone told us that West Side Story was an impossible project. And we were told that no one was going to be able to sing augmented fourths as in Maria. Also, they said the score was too rangy for pop music. Besides, who wanted to see a show in which the first act curtain comes down on two dead bodies lying on the stage? And then we had the really tough problem of casting it, because the characters had to be able to not only sing but dance and act and be taken for teenagers. Ultimately, some of the cast were teenagers. Some were 21, some were 30 but looked 16. Some were wonderful singers but couldn't dance very well, or vice versa. And if they could do both, then they couldn't act. So what's interesting, Mike, is in some ways this was the inception of what we now call in musical theater as a triple threat, namely people who can dance and act and sing. So luckily for us, Bernstein's tenacity prevailed. So this summer, the second half of the Bernstein program will be an expanded West Side Story suite for two pianos, percussion, and vocal soloists. So it's going to be an exciting program for anyone who loves classical music or musical theater. So again, I'd like to thank Jim and Sue Clow for sponsoring this Bernstein program that will appear on the stage of the Breakers on July 20th, 2018. And we'll end this evening's broadcast with the symphonic dances from West Side Story, conducted by Leonard Bernstein and played by the New York Philharmonic.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to WCRI's Festival Series featuring the Newport Music Festival. For more information on the festival, special seasonal concerts, to purchase tickets, or to donate, call 849-0700 or visit newportmusic.org.